lane, 15-10, touchdown, Chargers!
All right, welcome to another edition of Chargers Weekly, and this is sort of the beginning of free agency. We've moved on from a player, we've restructured a deal, but in the moment that we are recording this, there is still some business to be done. Daniel Popper, kind enough to join me this week on Chargers Weekly as we try to break it all down, figure it out. Be sure to follow Daniel on Twitter. Subscribe to The Athletic. Nobody does a better job. The man's got a freaking spreadsheet. He's projecting voidable years. If it's two voidable years, this is what our cap situation looks like. If it's four, this is what it looks like. There is a color chart. There's red, there's green, there's yellow. It really is. He's the best. And there's a reason why people always get excited and have notifications set up anytime you post something, Daniel. So thanks for doing it, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the intro. So I come from a family of accountants. You guys all think that my spreadsheet is great. When I show it to my dad and my brother, they are appalled and they want to disown me. So I'm appreciative that everyone else loves the spreadsheet, because in the family, I make the worst spreadsheets of anybody.
Listen, they can have their green glass shaded lamp and their visor and their pencils. And you've got a snowboard behind you, a hoodie, and you get to talk about football. So I think you're all right. You can take their derision and you're still coming out ahead.
Amen.
So let's get into it. This is what I expected to be, and I think it's what I don't just say that because it's hindsight, but we've been talking about it on Chargers Weekly. I thought moving forward, the way Khalil played last year, how important he was to Thule, it felt like that there was something there that they could figure out. And obviously we've heard about Keenan repeatedly from everybody that's been hired of how important he is. So just level of surprise and maybe what you think is still to come, Daniel.
Yeah, I think these were the natural first two steps. You know, after moving on from Eric Kendricks, you know, Mike, with the savings that they were going to get there with him coming off the injury, it just felt like a release was always going to happen there. They weren't going to have much leverage in a trade market to try and move him. A lot of teams were just going to wait him out and try and, get after him on the open market. So that one made sense. And then it felt like they were going to make a decision here between the two edge rushers as far as keeping one of them. That was sort of what I heard coming out of the combine. It made sense. And like you said, Khalil was unbelievable last year, and you're trying to set a culture here. I think performance is one thing, but you're also trying to shift things. And like, that was one of the big reasons why the Chargers went and traded for Khalil in the first place. Like, they obviously felt like he had some good football left, but the way he works, his leadership, his experience, like all of those different types of things, his play style, everything, like, people want to follow that, and it helps you really establish like what your players do on a day-to-day basis. And so I think when you sort of pile all of that together, like, okay, he was great last year. You know, obviously the front office and Joe Ortiz and the coaching staff with Jim Harbaugh are, you know, watching the tape from last year. You watch the tape last year, you see a guy that's still an elite edge rusher. And then I think those other sort of more intangible things of what he brings from a leadership standpoint to the locker room, it just makes sense to keep him around as you try and sort of reset this thing and build it into 24 and potentially beyond.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you got to keep somebody. That's the other thing. Yeah. Like, this defense is bare. I mean, it is. You've got Kenneth Murray, who's now a Titan. Eric Kendricks is now a Cowboy. You're talking Nick Neiman, Deion Henley, who are special teamers at linebacker. They've got one corner. I guess you can maybe say two, since Ja played in the slot a little bit in Asante and Ja. They brought back Aloe. I thought that was likely to happen just because, again, they've got to completely restock this defense, Daniel. And I know you do a great job over, you know, posting every day at The Athletic of, you know, here's the top 10 free agents that make sense. And, man, it looks like there's no interior lineman for them to go out and get and sign. And I don't know how that all comes together when it comes to trying to piece this thing to be just average, right? Yeah. Butting up against average for Jesse Minner.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on it. Like, those, you mentioned two positions that I'm sort of looking at, like linebacker, they've got very little there, you know? And I think Nick can play. Like, Nick has gone in there, Neiman, and he's played well in spots. You know, I remember the Vikings game, he made that game sealing play in the end zone against TJ Hockenson that Kenneth Murray picked off. And then obviously we've seen flashes for Deion on special teams. He's a fantastic athlete. That hamstring injury kind of set him back last year. So it's, you know, there's two players there, right? But like you go through a season, like, you know, to use a term, you know, from the previous regime, it's an attrition position, right? Like linebackers do often get hurt. Obviously Kendricks and Murray were healthy all of last year, but you don't really see that a lot. And then obviously the interior of the defensive line, you know, this, you know, Ortiz and Harbaugh have talked about building through the trenches. That obviously applies to offense. That also applies to defense, right? Yeah. And you see what the Niners have been able to do in like 4 days, where they've completely turned over their defensive line and gone out and traded for guys and signed guys. And who knows, they might not even be done yet. Like that's a team that builds through the trenches, builds through the defensive line and offensive line. And so like, how do you go about it? You know, if they make more moves here and clear up more cap space, like maybe they can just take a bunch of dart tosses. You know, like I go back to sort of what Houston did early on in the Caserio era, where they're just signing, you know, a bunch of guys on veteran minimum deals. And just like if two or three of those guys just show up in training camp, all of a sudden you have some players and you can sort of make it work. Corner's another interesting position. I would throw Dean Leonard in there. I think he's got some capacity on the outside. I've seen him make plays. You know, he's got some speed. He's got a little bit of length. That heel injury down the stretch, like I would have loved to see a little bit more out of him. You know, Ja, you mentioned, but like I think they need a little more experience in the slot too. Like, yeah. You know, I think they made a mistake last year. Like I think Ja has a future in the league. Like I think he can play in there and he's a really good special teams player. But I think they made a mistake of not adding more experience in there. So they had a second option in the slot when it didn't work out for Asante in training camp and early on in the season. And then they, you know, obviously, you know, Ja struggled a bit. So like Arthur Maulet is a guy that is interesting to me because he played in the defense last year, obviously different defensive coordinator, but he's going to be familiar with the scheme and he played really well in the slot last year for the Ravens. Like, can you go get him on a cheap deal and potentially patchwork it? At corner, but yeah, like at safety, I think getting Alohi back was enormous. Like there were two guys really, and you can tell me if you agree with this money, but I feel like there were two guys on defense that you could really rely on like week after week. And for me, it was Khalil and Alohi. Like those were the guys that were showing up and playing like disciplined, mistake-free football and then giving you something in terms of getting the football and for Khalil getting after the quarterback and that type of thing. So a lot of work to do defensively, I agree. And there's not a lot of pathways there. Like they're going to have to do really, really well in the draft this year to, you know, put a contender together if that's the plan.
And I think, you know, if you want to look at the horror film of Alohi and people point out he's not a natural free, I just thought he repeatedly got put in crappy positions last year. Yeah. And I think you can, not saying you can explain it all the way, but you can explain a lot of it away, where he has got no business being tasked with some of the things he was being asked to do, or just some of the busted coverages and guys handing off when they shouldn't have been. And that's what led to a lot of that. And I think he said it perfectly, Daniel, that he's a smart player. He's got incredible instincts. And I'll take that over sheer athleticism any day. Just being able to, I think, you know, you can point to kind of Kenneth Murray a little bit, right? Here's a guy that has got, that is built to play football. When you see him and you stand next to him, you're like, my God. And you can just see there's that tick that just, it's a beat slow. And that's what Alohi has. He's just so good at reading and reacting. And I think it was just 100% with you, a priority that they had to get him back. The one thing, and, you know, I talked about this. I do the thing for Bally's through Believe. And I was talking to Chris Harris. And we were, you know, discussing, like, this is a team that is just, for the last however many years, they have not invested in corner. Like they just, they don't, you know, I you can point to JC Jackson. They tried, right? So they tried with JC, but really outside of that, you're talking about, you know, 1 second round pick from Asante. Mikey Davis was a nice surprise as an undrafted free agent. Chris Harris was a short term kind of now on the back end slot. Like if they trade back, you know, everybody's talking about offense and wide receiver and tackle. And it's like, well, if you got the number one corner sitting there, this is something we have not seen this team do in the first round since Jason Verrett. If it's Mitchell or Arnold, like those are two really good corners that could go a long way in helping this team out.
Yeah, no, I think in a trade down scenario, I think corner has to be on the table. I'd be curious who you like between those two guys. You know, I watched a little bit of Arnold. He to me is like really has the coverage instincts.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it. Like he just like we talk about Alohi. Like you can see guys on tape that sort of have that feel for the position. They just know how to cover, how to move their body, how to flip their hips to defend in certain situations based on leverage. Like you can see that he has that. You know, how much of it is feel, how much of it is the coaching at Alabama, doesn't really matter. He has that. Mitchell to me seems like more of a traitsy guy. Obviously he had huge ball production in college at Toledo, but like, yeah, I think like that corner is a position that I've been watching a little bit because in a trade down scenario, it would make a lot of sense because they don't have a ton there. And like you said, they haven't really invested through the draft as far as building that position group out. And they certainly need some help, whether it's a guy that can play inside or outside. Like they could use, you know, they could use players at sort of either spot there. And you know, corner is going to be important. Like that was one of the things that just never came together, you know, over the last three seasons on defense, is you just never had a group that really played together.
Right.
There was one stretch. The best defensive stretch of the past 3 years was down the stretch of the 22 season when they won four in a row and made the playoffs. And what you had is a group playing together. And what you had was a playbook that had been pared down and really fit into who was playing. And that's what guys talked about when it all sort of came together there. You had some cohesion and really a plan at like, okay, this is where everyone was playing. And then you go into 23 and it's revolving doors and in the first, you know, three, four games of the season. So I'm with you. Like, I think corner is totally an option in a trade down scenario. Who do you like between those two guys?
I like Arnold. I think, you know, you can, I appreciate the traits, and he obviously, everybody I talked to that was at the Senior Bowl said that Mitchell was impressive and that they saw what they needed to see. But for me, it's not the 40. It's, look, those are important. Don't get me wrong. It's a position where the 40 is important and the explosives, the vert and the broad are important. But man, when you just watch him in those drills and how smooth he is, like that really jumped out to me. And plus, Alabama's got a track record, you know, Nick just coaches defensive backs up. And, you know, I feel more comfortable with that in a first round situation. Like the interesting thing about corner is premium position, but you still find guys that come out of the second round, that come out of the third round. Like that rarely happens at tackle. Like it just, you almost never get the tackle that comes out of the second, third. Like it just, it's a first round position. Same thing. Like I know, you know, yes, you can find edge, Max Crosby and Turner. Like there are those guys, but like edge tends to be a first round position. And like, I'm becoming more and more enamored with Dallas. Like I really am starting to say, wow, like if you trade back and he's sitting there, the idea that you can pair he and Thule moving forward for the 10 years is also interesting to be like, that's the thing about five is stick and pick. I think it might've been you that posted it. And I never quite thought about it in that context, but you always hear best player available and nobody has done that more than the Ravens. Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, they actually do it. Right. Like,
they actually do it. So if they stick at five, it's going to be wide receiver. I would have to believe that just the grades on Neighbors or Adunze or Harrison are higher than what they would have on Alt or, and the thing about tackle is I feel like they're all together. It's just preference. Like I think you talk to, and I would love to know what Devlin and Nick think, you know, how they would break it down. But like, I look at Fuaga and I see like a total Jim Harbaugh just type of tackle. Latham obviously has got the measurables. Like there are so many different directions they could go that work. That's what's crazy. Like that's the tough part about it. Like, yes, this works on the line. We need to be more physical and run. Yes, this works. You need explosiveness. We have not had an explosive receiver with just incredible traits like you have with those three. You need a corner. You need another edge. Like, that's the tough part. That's what's so tough about that particular pick.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a lot of it. Let's start with the tackles because I agree with you 100%. Like I turned on the Fuaga film and I was like, that's got to be the guy. He's just mean. He's a bully. Like he goes, like you watch even a little bit of his tape, guys are flying everywhere and it doesn't matter what position they play. I saw him tossing around edge rushers. I saw him tossing around defensive tackles, certainly defensive backs, linebackers. Like he's mean. And like, you know, like as far as pass protection, like are there some weaknesses there as far as guys getting to his outside? Yeah, sure. But like if you're talking about trading down potentially in that, you know, 8 to 13 range and you want to bring in a guy that, you know, fits what you're trying to do, offensively and how you're trying to build your team and the identity of the team, like that guy makes so much sense. I agree with you. Like, basically, you look, I had conversations at the combine. I heard five different tackles at the top of different people's boards.
Yeah.
You know, between, you know, teams, you know, draft experts, you know, consultants, you know, media, like everyone has a different guy that they like, which is interesting because usually you have a group, maybe a two tackles that you're deciding between. This is genuinely like five guys that you're deciding between. And it's about who you really like. You know, Ault is a guy, great athleticism, great size. We talk about feel for the position at corner, right? This guy has a feel for the position at tackle. It's not always pretty, but he understands angles and he understands how to get his body in between a defender and a quarterback, or in between a defender and a running back, and to clear holes. And so it's a pick your poison situation. And with that, it's like, okay, do you feel comfortable taking a guy at five at who might be a little bit flawed? And maybe isn't that like slam dunk prospect? That's why when I did my first mock, and also when we've done our beat writer mocks, like, I don't know how you pass on Malik Nabers if he's there. Like, this is assuming Harrison is gone, but I'm totally with you. Like, that's the type of difference maker that the Chargers have been looking for forever. And like, he jumps off the screen with his way, the way he accelerates out of his breaks, particularly on deep balls, the way he can set up defenders on deep balls. Like, it's not just run straight. Like, he has some deception in terms of how he plays in the deep part of the field. So, like you said, like, in a trade down scenario, it opens the door for a lot of stuff. At five, you feel like, okay, it's receiver, maybe tackle. If you trade down, like, you know, they need help everywhere. And so I wouldn't really be surprised by anything.
I think the, you know, the outside question of quarterback. Exactly. That would be surprising. I think in terms of like just it's going to be a trade down. I just don't see how it's not, especially, you know, this free agent cycle further solidifies the premium on an elite wide receiver on a rookie contract. I mean, when Calvin Ridley has a down year and he's getting $92 million, and I believe Calvin's a one. I love him. I love his game, and it was a weird situation, but still $92 million. Like, so they're going to have, I think someone's going to look at either Nabers or Dunze and say, let's go get him. And like, that's a lot of people. It's funny. Like, the one thing I take more incoming on than anything week after week is, look, do I have a little bit of a bias? Yeah, I do. I'm a West Coast guy, and I like a Dunze. And I do believe in culture setters and culture changers. And I think, you know, what Kalen DeBoer did at Washington was obviously predicated on Michael Penix. But I think a Dunze was as important to that as Penix was at creating what they created it at Washington. He is, I said this about Amon-Ra when kind of the Chargers I knew were in that middle round draft. And I was like, listen, I don't know anything about the measurables and what you're looking for, but I can tell you, my daughter was in high school when he was at Modern Day. And when they were in those Bosco games, there was one guy. There was one guy, and it was jet sweeps, and it was at the running back position and in the red zone. That dude refused to let that team lose. And that's how I feel about Adunze. Like, when the chips are down, that guy comes up with something. And
he's got a little mic to him in that way, especially ball winner plays, right? Like,
but just a superior athlete, like a Larry Fitzgerald. Like, that's what he reminds me of, is Larry Fitzgerald. Here is a gigantic receiver that has the explosiveness that you see the way he works his breaks. So, but look, I'm with you. Nabers is incredible. And that's sort of the level of explosiveness that we haven't seen here. And so I want to make it clear, I have no problem if they draft the receiver at five. I have no issue with that. I think there are so many bigger issues on this team that if they trade back and take the tackle or the defensive end or the corner instead, they can get McConkey, they can get Wilson, they can get, you know, Addy or Worthy out of Tech. They can find another way to make it. Pearsall, they can find a way to make it work and add to that room while maybe getting something that I think would be more impactful right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. 2 points. First point is, you trade down and you give up your chance to take Nabers and or Adunze, and those guys become what we think they're going to become.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's it tough, is. Especially coming from Baltimore, where, you know, in Ortiz, where like best player available is what you do, you know, that would be a little bit difficult. The other thing is, what are you asking for in return? Now, obviously, that depends on where you're trading down to. If it's 9, that's different than 11. That's different than with the Vikings. That's different than 13 with the Raiders. 9, obviously, being the Bears. The Bears would be the one trading up for the receiver. The other two are more if you're trying to trade up for a quarterback. Are you looking for 2024 capital to add as much to this roster right now as possible? Or are you thinking down the road, hey, let's try and get a future first, and then all of a sudden, you know, we'll do what we can this year, piece it together, and hope Justin can carry us. And then all of a sudden, you got 2 first-round picks in, you know, 2025, potentially high picks if one of these teams is trading up for a quarterback and that rookie starts. And then all of a sudden, you're really cooking, right? So that's my – I don't know what they're going to do. I would probably – and I did this in our beat writer mock, a little tease. I would probably target – future first in 2025, because I think there's a market inefficiency there. I think the Eagles have been attacking it more than anybody else. Well, where teams are like, yeah, I'll take a future first. Like, we're going to make the playoffs and it'll be like the 26th pick. And then, you know, they're the, you know, the Panthers, and they end up like 1-15 or whatever, 1-16, 2-15, whatever they were. So that's where I would go that direction. But I'm curious what you think, what you would do and what you think they would do as far as a return in a trade down scenario.
Yeah, I think it works both ways for me. I'm fine with either, just because of how deep this draft is. And, you know, I think it would depend on how deep it is at wide receiver, how deep it is at O-line. You know, if you feel really good about what you're getting in return, you know, you could. So let's say you get an extra second. Well, what if you decide to package those together, jump back up, and now you've got Graham Barton, who a lot of people think is the best projected. So now you trade back, you get your tackle, you trade back up with that extra second, and now you've solidified your offensive line. You're done. The most important trench position offensively, and you move forward. Now, that said, this is what I do regularly on this, is I contradict myself. The idea, you know, but we just saw it. Like, the thing is, it's nebulous. It's constantly changing. We just saw freaking Hunt get a $100 million contract at interior line to be average. So like that all becomes part of it. That if you can get an elite level starter locked in for 5 years on the offensive line, you know, you're talking about Slater, Zion. I believe Zion's going to have a big year with this new, I feel it. I just look at him. He's smart. I feel like that's fine. So like, if you can now get 4 of your 5 offensive linemen to be in what you believe is an elite category, and they're all young and they're on different pay scales moving forward, that to me makes a lot of sense. So that's where I think about, and you would even maybe have to trade back in. I know there's a lot of interior linemen that, whether it's center, Wisconsin, Penn State, like there's a lot of centers that people like that you're going to be able to get in the second, maybe third, even fourth round. Like the one name that I've heard as like, and I'm going to, You could probably remember how to price it. Fatanu, the Washington tackle guard who's being projected middle of the round, like the top interior lineman.
Okay. Yeah.
I like coming out, there's people that think he's the best lineman. Like, dude, this guy, you can play him at tackle, he's fine. You want to put him at guard, he's gonna be the best guard in the draft. You want to put him at center, and this guy could end up being the next great center for the next 15 years in the NFL. So like, that's where it all gets sort of interesting. Now, as I make this answer way too long, Daniel, I love the idea of next year, because like, if we're just being realistic, I mean, if we're really looking at the way this thing is lined up this year, you're playing the AFC North, you've got the Chiefs in your division, you know, you can try to get in, and these guys are competitive, and I believe in them. I believe they will instill some sort of winning culture and toughness, and they can win every one of these games and make the postseason. But especially if it's the Bears, because that's very similar to what the Dolphins did for Jalen Waddle when they traded up and they sacrificed a future first. You know, and to me, I would take that swing. I would take that swing in a division with the Lions and a division with the Packers. If that's what you can get out, if you can get a future first from the Bears to go from 9 to 5 because they want to pair an elite receiver with Caleb right away and get rolling, I would 100% do that. as opposed to going back two more spots and taking a two and a three this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like, I lean toward future first capital in 25, but like, it's really about what they want the timeline to be. And that's what we really don't know. You know, like if they're like, hey, we like, you know, Jim Harbaugh came in San Francisco, they were 6-10. He turned that thing around in 1 year. Like, he could look at this and say, like, we're going to turn this around. Like, we're going to do it in 1 year. And in that case, then trading down and getting capital this year. I love your idea of, you know, potentially packaging the 2 seconds to move back in the first and going to get a center if a center is falling.
Yeah.
Like that makes a lot of sense to me, but it's all about timeline. We got a little bit, I wrote about this yesterday. We got a little bit of a taste, right? In them keeping Khalil Mack to like, hey,
yeah,
not a full tear down here. We're not going to shred it up. So, you know, that tells you that, hey, they're trying to do a little something here because they're pushing some of Khalil's money down the road. You know, but, you know, in the end, they're probably going to fall somewhere in the middle. And it's like, okay, what is exactly the timeline here? And how does that impact the draft strategy in terms of what they're looking for in a trade down scenario?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you also look at the division, and obviously we focus on the Chiefs because that's the easiest way to get in the tournament, right? Is to win the division. But behind it, you've got a bridge quarterback signed by the Raiders, and you would assume they want to find that, you know, word is that they are trying to get up into that top three. I don't think they're going to be able to get there. I can't imagine any of those three teams passing on any of these three quarterbacks. All the Drake May shade that is out there from the talking heads, don't believe it. The teams love him. Teams, yeah, freaking love this guy. He's going in the top three. Okay. So, yeah, and I would be floored if Washington, knowing what's coming next year, and granted, look, Jaden Daniels was not on the radar last year coming into this year, but this is the quarterback class. This is the class that everybody wants. So I just don't envision the Raiders being able to get up there. So they have Minshew obviously on a bridge deal, and he's going to compete with Anokon. I have no idea what the Broncos are going to do. That's four games. That's four of your games right there in division. You know, do we think the NFC South is a huge mountain to overcome? Falcons are obviously going to be good with Kirk, much better. But you get the Panthers, the Bucks, and the Saints. Yeah. Like, you can piece this together and feel like, okay, I think we can get there. I think, you know, and I think when you have Justin at quarterback, I think you just, that's what you sort of highlighted here, Daniel. I think you're exactly right. When Justin's your quarterback, you want to go after it every year, because just think about that Bengals roster that Joe Burrow took to the Super Bowl, you know, and how many questions surrounded that offensive line, you know, and then Hendrickson ends up popping as that free agent. Like, it just all came together. What did they do? They took the receiver instead of the tackle. Yeah. You know, they took the receiver instead of the, yeah, they took the receiver instead of the tackle, and it became, yeah. So, like, I think that's how they can, and it looks like, based on, you know, kind of you doing that detective work of Khalil Mack, it's like, yeah, I think that's what they're thinking. They're thinking, when you have Justin, even though you have no defensive tackles, no linebackers, you need a corner. Like, they can still visualize, you know, and the one, like, I would love to get your take on this.
Yeah.
I like Josh Palmer. Like,
yeah, where did this come from? Like, I don't know where, like, it feels like the fan base is super down on him. Like, he's a good player. Like, he's like a really good number three receiver, which is, and they took him in the third round. Like, right. I feel like, I was actually thinking about that last night. I was like, that was a good pick. Like, he's a really consistent player. He doesn't really have a lot of weaknesses in his game. Like, he's a good route runner. He's got good hands. He's got good feel. He can, you know, get to multiple areas of the field, you know, short, intermediate, and even deep sometimes. Like, he's a good third receiver. I don't know where it came from that everyone soured on him so much. The question mark in the receiving room is Quentin. You know, what are they going to get out of him? I know that they're like, they're excited about, you know, what he could be, right? Sanjay Lal, the receivers coach coming in from Seattle, you know, you look at what he did with DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
You know, obviously different players, but you talk about molding tools into something tangible on the field. Like, you know, I could see him taking a step. That's really the question mark. To me, like, I have a lot more faith in Josh Palmer to be a consistent performer than I do Quentin, based on what I've seen.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And like, I brought this up last week. I said, the thing, show me a Harbaugh team that had a highlight wide receiver. There aren't any. That there were none at Michigan. There were none at Stanford. You could argue Crabtree, he might have been top 20.
That would be the guy. That would be the guy.
You know, but really, it was Frank Gore, Vernon Davis, who had a monster year. The year that Crabtree had his 1,100-yard season, Vernon Davis had a monster year that year. So it's like, maybe they have enough. With Keenan Allen's better than Michael Crabtree ever was. Yeah. So you've already got Keenan as a one. And that's, you know, they signed Disley, so that could potentially help you out at right tackle. You actually have a tight end who can block for a change and help you out on that side of the line. So, like, now, to me, like, there's a lot of that it just continues to add to the many different directions they've been going. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but, like, to me, that then can bring the Brock Bowers conversation into play where, you know, we feel like we've got enough. What if we add a truly unique weapon? You know, like, because, like, the thing when he showed up in San Francisco and took a 6-10 team to 13-3, they were stacked. You know, like, that team, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman at linebacker, Alden Smith, Ahmad Brooks, Justin Smith at the front. They had Staley at left tackle. They had Frank Gore, Vernon Davis. Like, they had players. Mm-hmm. And so I think the idea of, do we have enough where we could really kind of drop this? I just don't know if Joe Ortiz wants his first ever first round pick for the Chargers to be that kind of swing on a Brock Bowers. If you're going to pass up the receiver, you know, are you?
You're saying a guy that,
I'm saying if they traded down, could Brock Bowers then be that piece and just be that total Swiss Army knife of, hey man, try to figure this out. Try to. Yeah. The Travis Kelce, that sort of level. Because, like, people, I think, forget Vernon Davis was a complete bust. You think about the meltdown that Mike Singletary had about him and you know, I want guys coming off the field that aren't all nonchalant. And, like, that whole rant. And what did Harbaugh do? He came in and he's like, you're incredible. We're going to feature you. And guy ends up having back-to-back monster seasons.
He's a physical specimen, though. Vernon Davis, like, at the University of Maryland where he went, that's where I went to school. I mean, he still has every single weightlifting record, like, to college
exactly.
Decades ago. So, listen, trade-down scenario, like, sure, Brock Bowers should be available. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised by anything. My issue is really positional value. If you take him at five, he's got to be a top five player in the league by the end of the contract. And then people saying that you can get the surplus value on the second deal. In order to do that, he has to be Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews. He has to be your 1A passing option in the offense. And that's like, there's just not a lot of margin for error. Now, if you take him at 9, 10, 11,
now in that good. 8
to 13 range, the cap hit in the fourth year of the contract is around $6 million, which is like, okay, now you have to be a top 15 player. Top 17 player at the position. That to me is like, okay, I can see surplus value in that contract. The issue with me is all about, okay, how do you get the value out of it at five on the rookie deal so that when you pay him, you know, you're not like, you know, sinking value in both the rookie deal and and the second contract. But like,
well, and that,
like,
I think
people are high on it.
Yeah, that applies also. I you know, this is something I brought up too that people forget about is the gap between number five and number nine, and then the gap between number five and like number 12 is gigantic in terms
money-wise.
I mean, so if you have, let's just say you're like, okay, we like all these tackles. This is our identity. Let's build out this line. If you've got, you know, Fuaga and Fashanu and Alt and Latham, and they're all come together, absolutely trade down and don't hand over a whatever it is, $29 million, I think it's a $35 million contract.
Yeah.
Give out a $22 million contract instead and get a player that's got the same amount of grade. It just, the trade down scenario to me makes so much sense, unless the grade on Neighbors and Adunze is so far ahead of everybody else that you can't ignore that gap, that it's just not worth it to take that drop.
Yeah, agreed. So as far as offensive line, I wanted to go back to this. So let's say they trade down and they get Fuaga and they feel like he can play at right tackle, and then they're able to get a center in the second round, and maybe they signed, you know, Bradley Bozeman or some sort of veteran center to compete there. Okay, so you feel like you have left tackle set with Rashawn, you have left guard set with Zion. I agree with you. I think like with a different scheme and different coaching, I think he can be the player they expected him to be when they drafted him in the first round. You've got two guys competing at center. You've got two guys basically competing at right tackle with, you know, Trey and then your rookie in this scenario, Fuaga. What do you do at right guard? That's really like a big question. Now, yeah. What I think they could do is if they take a guy like Fuaga, who some people think will be a better guard than tackle, you have basically Jamari Salyer, who can play at tackle and guard, has played guard, you know, was better at tackle. You have Fuaga, who can play both spots. And then maybe you give, you know, Trey Pipkins a look inside, and you have three guys sort of competing for those two spots. My question would be, you know, what would you do at right guard? Because right. The offensive line is going to be really, really important. They got Gus Edwards. You know, they feel like they got a pure runner there, downhill, physical. They finally got a blocking tight end after I've been writing about it ad nauseum for like 17 years. But you got to also, you know, fill out that offensive line and feel like you can get push on both sides. So you have a two-way go in the running game. So what would you do there? If the vision is running game, what do you do at right guard?
Yeah, to me, it's, you know, the Trey Pipkins thing becomes a attrition position, right? Guys get hurt. So to be able to have a swing like Trey, I think, or to have, you know, have another tackle helps a lot. To have positional flexibility with Jamari helps. I don't know what you think. I thought McFadden played pretty well last year.
I agree.
When he jumped it, you know, that would be like, I would probably lead with him over Salyer. Yeah. I do think, and look, I believe in this coaching staff. I think the world of Nick. I really do. He's one of the smartest guys I've ever talked football with. And he's someone that I think just understands that position so well and comes from that background that I love, you know, all-state wrestler, incredible hands, understands leverage. And I think and Devlin, obviously think a lot of people think very highly of Devlin. So to me, look, I don't think the coaching was where it should have been last year. What they focused on, I'll leave it that way. What they chose to focus on the offensive line is not what I think you need to focus on when it comes to offensive line. And that will be rectified this year. And I believe you will see. And that's where it becomes interesting. I feel like we've seen a little bit too much variance from Trey to feel really good about going into a season knowing how just over and over and over again teams would line up their best rusher against him and it would be an issue. Now, again, you said you've been ad nauseum asking for that blocking tight end to help out over there. Get backs that can help pass pro, you know, and help out over there and feel good about Rashawn. But like, to me, that's kind of where I come out. And maybe this particular staff is like, oh no, we're good with Trey. We can work with this. This, he's got enough and we can work with this. But like, to me, that's where that right, just to answer your left or right guard question, depending on where they want to put Zion moving forward. I thought McFadden looked pretty good.
Yeah,
I did. I think they can work with that.
Yeah, he was really good in the Broncos game. Like, I watching that tape, I was like, okay, that guy can potentially play in the league there, which is a really good point. The other really good point is that we have no idea how much coaching is going to impact, you know, all of these guys. And I think you said it well, so I'm not even going to try and explain it. I think that was very deft in how you went about that. Like, I think, you know, I'll give it a spin. So I think, like, in order, and I'll take what Greg Roman said at his introductory press conference with beat writers. In order to be a good running team, there has to be intention. And what he said is you actually have to call the runs. You got to do it, you know? And I think there was some frustration among all the players involved in the run game that they would get away from it. And that was under both Joe Lombardi and Kellen Moore. And it was like, we got to get in a rhythm. Like, the human element of this thing, I think, gets lost. It's like, if you're an offensive lineman, you want to get after people. And so, you know, if there are a couple runs early in the game that don't hit, you got to stick with it because those guys want to get after people. And that's the vision. That's what these guys believe in, from Harbaugh to Roman. You got to call them. You got to have an identity. You have to have an intention. And then you have to get after people. So I think on a philosophical level, like, you can probably expect elevated play in the run game from all of these offensive linemen strictly because of that. And then you start talking about like the details, the specifics of technique and all that kind of stuff. If that improves from a coaching standpoint, you know, how much improvement are you going to see when you have both of those things working together? The philosophical approach and the intention, and then also, you know, better day-to-day practice to practice, snap to snap coaching on the technique and stuff. And so like,
right.
I think they have pieces there, but like, if they're going to build it this way and they're going to be a running team and they want to be a bully, you got to keep investing in offensive line. It's got to be
100%. An
every year thing where you're just turning it over every year, more talent, more talent, more talent, create that competition. And just have that talent base so that if guys do leave in free agency, you get a comp pick and you got another, you know, player coming up. And that's, I think, what they're trying to do.
I mean, to me, that's, again, if this is what you're doing long-term, you just said it. I think there's, you think about what the Packers do every year when they draft a receiver, if not two in the third and fourth round, like every year I draft a running back and I would draft an offensive lineman. Like that's that. Hey, rounds 3 through 6, two of those picks are going to be O-lineman and running back. Like that to me is, it just keep churning. And like you said, it's just a, you can let them walk, you get your comp pick, and here's the next guy we plug in because this is how we're going to play. And I think that's one thing about Roman is, you know, he is, from what, you know, my understanding is, he's someone who has been in control of everything. He is not just a play caller. He is invested in, when it comes to the run game, the O-line, he's not just the play, he is the running back, he's coaching the O-line, he's calling the O-line, he's calling everything when it comes to the runs. And it's one of the reasons why there's just so much consistency, because he knows front to back, it's not just a call on a play sheet. It's, this is how it needs to be executed, this is why it's being executed this way, and it's not about this one play, it's about the full 60 minutes of where we're going front to back. And I think it's also why the sort of passing game coordinator has always been important in those offenses. And that's where the whole Harbaugh thing comes in, you know, with having Roman, this is a pair that's been very comfortable, you know, merging, you know, what Roman is so good at with, you know, Jim Harbaugh, who probably doesn't get enough credit because he's viewed, I think, more as like that CEO culture setter toughness, which is true. But this is a guy that can call offense. This is a guy that knows how to call offense. So I think that's kind of what people lose sight on is that, yeah, Roman's here to kind of rebuild this run game, which has never existed since they moved here in 2017. Yep. It really hasn't existed for the last 15, 20 years. And you know, when you marry that with what Harbaugh is able to do, I'm very, very excited to see something we just haven't seen, just a style that we have not seen. And look, Anthony Lynn tried to do it. You know, he tried to do it. They just didn't. The line was, it was bad. Like the line was bad in those years. When you think, like, it is crazy to think about what they rolled out there on the offensive line.
I don't want.
Which is why, I mean the Forrest Lamp, Dan Feeney,
Sam Tevy. Gosh,
Sam Tevy at tackle, Okun, who was on one leg, you know, but pretty much the entire time he was here. And, remind me, who am I forgetting from Chicago?
Michael Schofield.
Yeah, like you got no chance.
Yeah.
You've got no chance. So to be able to have that, those bodies, the amount of talent they have, this, you can really make an elite unit. And look, there's, you know, look at what they had at Michigan. You're talking about a team that won the award for the best offensive line, guys that were winning the Remington Trophy. Like that's how they did it. You know, look what he put into the league. What did he put in the league from Stanford and Michigan? Linemen, defensive and offensive linemen. That's what they put into the league, and guys who excelled at their positions in the league. So,
and a quarterback.
Exactly.
And a really good quarterback. Yeah. Yes, that's because exactly. I think that gets to your point, right? Like, I think this whole idea that Greg Roman's going to come in as the play caller is just going to be smash mouth and only smash mouth. Like, Jim Harbaugh played 15 years in the league. Like, this guy was slinging it. Like, he's a quarterback. Yeah. I think a Greg Roman offense filtered through Jim Harbaugh is very different than a Greg Roman offense filtered through John Harbaugh, who's a special teams defensive coach. And I will say this, like, this is going to be a Jim Harbaugh offense. Like, he is very involved in these early stages of building this offense. Yeah. He's not taking a back seat at all whatsoever. And so I think you're right on it there. The one thing is, like, they're going to have alignment here. And if you go back to the previous regime, they were kind of patching the run game together. Like, they wanted ideas from a bunch of different places. You know, they wanted the outside zone stuff, you know, from the Shanahan tree, So they brought in Shane Day, a quarterback's coach, and then they had Frank Smith, who was really the one implementing it, but had never really coached for a Shanahan tree head coach or offensive guy. And then you had some, you know, different elements, you know, from the New Orleans days, and they were trying to kind of bring it all together. And that's tough to do. Like, you need that alignment, you know, from the head coach on down, as far as like, this is going to be our identity schematically, philosophically,
right,
to produce. And then when you translate that to the players, they know exactly what you're about. You know, it's not like, hey, we're going to do some of this and some of this and some of this and some of this. It's all going to come together and be great. They're like, well, what are we? And I think Corey Linsley talked that about that like a lot publicly. Like, hey, we never really had that identity of like, okay, we're going to be whatever it is. We're going to be
right.
an outside zone team, or we're going to be like a duo downhill team. Like, it was never, that vision was never, you know, crystallized in a way that the players felt super confident about. And that, I can guarantee you, that will not happen under the Harbaugh Roman regime.
Let's I'm with you 100%. Yeah. They are going to have an identity. I can promise you that. And because they look, they've run, you know, gap, and you'll, like you said, I think you'll see a lot of gap, a lot of duo and power, you know, God's play. That's what you're going to see. I'm anxious to see which fullback
they end up. You're going to run some power.
Fullback.
Unless they think Disley can fullback there. I mean, maybe.
Yeah. So you said it. Let's finish with that, Daniel. Okay. The guys that they have signed. We did not dig into Gus Edwards. You kind of briefly mentioned Will Disley, but everybody had tracked, you know, that connected those two dots. Gus Edwards makes too much sense. And I'm anxious to see if they maybe decide to get the other guy as well on a 1-year flyer coming off an injury. Just bring Dobbins over, because, man,
I'm all in on that. There's so much upside there. Like, give him a vet minimum contract with like tons of incentives up to, you know, up to like that market level of $6 million. And like, if he comes back from the injury and he's anything close to what he was,
yes,
you know, before the Achilles or even before the ACL, like, all of a sudden you've got two really good backs. You complement him with a rookie, and then all of a sudden you got really good competition in camp as well, where Isaiah Spiller's got to prove himself he's going to stay on the roster. Like,
right,
that plan makes a lot of sense to me as well. Yeah, I love the potential J.K. Dobbins play if they can set up the contract that way.
Yeah, but just getting Gus out here and actually having a legitimate big back who has shown can be productive in this league, something they haven't had. They have not had a back like this since they arrived in 2017.
Yeah, like, I think we've talked about a lot of the issues with the running game that they're trying to fix. The one we haven't touched on is that, like, they just never had that pure runner. And they tried to find it, like, that guy that's just downhill between the tackles that can play that type of bully style that you want in the run game. Austin Eckler is a fantastic player, like, super dynamic. But the strength of his game was never as, like, a runner of the football. Like, he could do it, but where he brought value was as a pass catcher. You know, being able to line up in different spots and then being, you know, in my opinion, maybe the best angle route runner in the league. Joshua Kelly has some of those traits, but I just don't think he ever had sort of that natural feel of how to see the vision, how to hit holes. It just never felt really natural. And I think that was part of the reason he didn't take the step. Some of it is the other stuff we talked about between the blocking itself and the philosophy. So I think, you know, with Edwards, what you have is a guy that can be that type of bully. Like, and the one thing that's really interesting to me about Gus Edwards is, yeah, he's 29, but he doesn't have a ton of mileage.
No.
Like, you're talking about, I think it's like 750, maybe 800 career touches. Compare that to Eckler, who's at, you know, 2,000 career touches and is the same age. Like, I think it makes a lot of sense. You're not even paying that much for him, but you're also bringing in a guy who doesn't have a ton of mileage. And maybe these are the years where he becomes that workhorse and you can really put that load on him because he hasn't had that load in years past. So I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, as far as the vision, the fit, the contract, all of it. I thought it was a great signing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many third and ones. You're watching them trot Eckler out there or Joshua Kelly, and it's like, will you give it to the guy who's 220 pounds that's on the sideline? At least give Spiller the shot to make this happen. Don't stop going with the guy that's 205. So to have someone with actual girth that can maybe push that pile, you know, the 3 feet that you needed to go, not to mention, I would assume Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh are going to have a very long conversation and making sure Justin Herbert's a lot more comfortable on quarterback sneaks, knowing how valuable that is. And just that the other coordinators and coaches could not convey to him to be more effective on that front.
Yeah.
Disley was someone that we had, you know, whether it was Parkinson or Disley, it seemed like those Seattle tight ends were connected to the Chargers as well. and they finally get a tight end who is very good at blocking and plenty capable in the receiving game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I was looking through potential options that they could afford, and Disley was the guy that jumped out to me.
Yeah.
You need a blocker. Like, you need a guy that can block. I shouldn't be getting, like, worked up about it because they finally signed the guy that I've been waiting for them to sign for 5 years. But it felt like I could not understand why they wouldn't go out and just get a blocking tight end on a cheap deal. You know, like, there was all...
They're not expensive.
Chris Manhertz, like, 2 years, $6 million. Like, just go do it. You, like, there were opportunities to go sign one of these guys. And they were like, no, we're going to roll with Gerald Everett. And we believe Trey McKitty's going to take the step. And it's like, well, I'm no football expert, but I was watching Trey McKitty week over week, and I never saw it at any point. So I don't know why the confidence was there. But bygones be bygones, right? Like, I think what you're seeing now is like, well, this coaching staff and the front office are aligned that they want to run the football. And if you want to run the football, you got to have a tight end that can block. And that's why they prioritized it. So you go out with limited cap space, you get a runner with the physicality that you're looking for, and you get a professional blocker at tight end. And like, that to me is like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. You can see what the vision is. You can see what the process is. You can see what they want to do. They've said it publicly, and it's aligned with the moves that they're making. And I think it's a little bit of a change of pace from what we've seen in recent seasons from the organization.
And I always said we were going to do about 30, and we ended up with 51, but
we
could
go more, honestly.
We could. I got to prep for an Iowa, Indiana, or an Iowa, Ohio State, and a Penn State, Indiana game tonight. So I'm in a hotel room, and it's why we have Daniel Popper looking like the ultimate warrior with the sun coming through the blinds.
I'm trying to close my blinds.
You're trying like hell. You're trying like hell. But
It's great like when I'm working because I get great natural light in my office, but it's not great for when I'm recording podcasts because this is definitely going to get screenshotted and used as a meme.
Oh, yeah. Ultimate Warrior, dude. It is lined up perfectly. There are moments where I'm telling you, man, we just got to get you some sweet freaking suede tassels coming off your freaking swole biceps and you will be good to go, brother. That's our tease to get you to go to the YouTube and Chargers.com to watch the video portion of it. But be sure to follow Daniel on Twitter, subscribe to The Athletic. It's just the best, man. He does a hell of a job, and you've been posting stuff every single day. And to put a button on it, because I like feeling like I'm right, and if you agree with me, then that makes me feel good. Yeah, if you told me they got to go out and get one more free agent, J.K. Dobbins is my guy. I was like, that makes way too much sense to me. Obviously, they need a center. They need defensive tackles, all that stuff. They're going to go bargain shopping here these next couple weeks once they get the contract squared away with Joey and Keenan and figure out how much more money they have. Yeah. But
my guy is Brian Allen.
I think
he makes so much sense.
Yeah. I assume there's a comp pick there, but I don't think he's going to cost that much.
He got cut. He got cut by the Rams.
Oh, he got cut.
Yeah,
oh,
so
I didn't
no
know we got cut.
There.
Perfect.
And
so no
starter for the Super Bowl team in 2021, but he lost his job to Coleman Shelton last year. So probably get him at a decent price because he didn't start last year. We're talking about a guy with considerable experience in the playoffs as well. A guy that makes a ton of sense if they can get him for the right price. But you know me, I'm always going to focus on offensive linemen because I will keep talking about it until I see a complete unit.
Yeah, 100%. And this is our year. I feel it. It's all lining up.
Yeah.
All right. So appreciate y'all. Chargers Weekly in the books. Unfortunately, nothing new on Keenan Allen and Joey Bosa as the time at the moment that we recorded this. So I would assume that's going to get probably squared away in the next couple days, maybe even hours by the time we post it. So forgive us our trespasses if in fact that happens. But thank you for downloading, listening. We appreciate you. Subscribe, tell your friends, rate, comment. Do it all, and we'll be back again next week.